Ogun sat where he was, without moving for perhaps 5 seconds, eyes wide, hands gripping the armrests of his chair, feeling a little like Captain Kirk in the aftermath of a Klingon attack. He was aware there was a lot of dirt and crumbled glass in his lap and something else as well, but not what the something else was. He was also aware of the wind blowing more dirt through the van's broken windows. Then his vision was temporarily blocked by a swiftly moving object. The object was a model of white skin, brown dirt, raw knuckles, and red blood. It was a fist, and it struck Hogan squarely in the nose. The agony was immediate and intense, as if someone had fired a flare gun directly into his brain. For a moment, his vision was gone, swallowed in a vast white flash. It had just begun to come back when the kid's hands suddenly clamped around his neck, and he could no longer breathe. The kid, Mr. Brian Adams from Nowhere, USA, was leaning over the console between the front seats. Blood from perhaps half a dozen different scalp wounds had flowed over his cheeks and forehead and nose like war paint. His gray-green eyes stared at Hogan with fixed, lunatic fury. "Look what you did, you fuck!" the kid shouted. "Look what you did to me!" Hogan tried to pull back and got half a breath when the kid's hold slipped momentarily, but with his seatbelt still buckled and still locked down as well from the feel, there was really nowhere he could go. The kid's hands were back almost at once, and this time his thumbs were pressing into his windpipe, pinching it shut. Hogan tried to bring his own hands up, but the kid's arms, as rigid as prison bars, blocked him. He tried to knock the kid's arms away, but they wouldn't budge. Now he could hear another wind, a high, roaring wind inside his own head. "Look what you did, you stupid shit! I'm bleeding!" The kid's voice, but further away than it had been. "He's killing me," Hogan thought, and a voice replied, "Right. Fuck you, sugar." That brought the anger back. He groped in his lap for whatever was there besides dirt and glass. It was a paper bag with some bulky object, Hogan couldn't remember exactly what, inside it. Hogan closed his hand around it and pistoned his fist upward toward the shelf of the kid's jaw. It connected with a heavy thud. The kid screamed in surprised pain, and his grip on Hogan's throat was suddenly gone as he fell over backward. Hogan pulled in a deep, convulsive breath and heard a sound like a tea kettle howling to be taken off the burner. "Is that me making that sound? My God, is that me?" He dragged in another breath. It was full of flying dust. It hurt his throat and made him cough, but it was heaven all the same. He looked down at his fist and saw the shape of the chattery teeth clearly outlined against the brown bag, and suddenly felt them move. There was something so shockingly human in this movement that Hogan shrieked and dropped the bag at once. It was as if he had picked up a human jawbone which had tried to speak to his hand. The bag hit the kid's back and then tumbled to the van's carpeted floor as Brian Adams pushed himself groggily to his knees. Hogan heard the rubber band snap and then the unmistakable click and chutter of the teeth themselves opening and closing. "It's probably just a cog knocked a little off track," Scooter had said. "I bet a man who was handy could get him walking and chomping again. Or maybe just a good knock would do it," Hogan thought. "If I live through this and ever get back that way, I'll have to tell Scooter that all you have to do to fix a pair of malfunctioning chattery teeth is roll your van over and then use them to hit a psychotic hitchhiker who's trying to strangle you. So simple, even a child could do it." The teeth clattered and smacked inside the torn brown bag. The sides fluttered, making it look like an amputated lung which refused to die. The kid crawled away from the bag without even looking at it, crawled toward the back of the van, shaking his head from side to side, trying to clear it. Blood flew from the clots of his hair in a fine spray. Hogan found the clasp of his seatbelt and pushed the pop release. Nothing happened. The square in the center of the buckle did not give even a little, and the belt itself was still locked as tight as a cramp, cutting into the middle-aged roll of fat above the waistband of his trousers and pushing a hard diagonal across his chest. He tried rocking back and forth in the seat, hoping that would unlock the belt. The flow of blood from his face increased, and he could feel his cheek flapping back and forth like a strip of dried wallpaper, but that was all. He felt panic struggling to break through amazed shock and twisted his head over his right shoulder to see what the kid was up to. It turned out to be no good. He had spotted his knife at the far end of the van, lying atop a litter of instructional manuals and brochures. He grabbed it, flicked his hair away from his face, and peered back over his own shoulder at Hogan. He was grinning, and there was something in that grin that made Hogan's balls simultaneously tighten and shrivel until it felt as if someone had tucked a couple of peach pits into his jockey shorts. "Ah, here it is," the kid's grin said. For a minute or two there, I was worried, quite seriously worried, but everything's going to come out all right after all. Things got a little improvisational there for a while, but now we're back to the script. "You stuck, label dude?" the kid asked over the steady shriek of the wind. "You are, ain't you? Good thing you buckled your belt, right? Good thing for me." The kid tried to get up, almost made it, and then his knees buckled. An expression of surprise so magnified it would have been comic under other circumstances crossed his face. Then he flicked his blood-greasy hair out of his face again and began to crawl toward Hogan, his left hand wrapped around the imitation bone handle of the knife. The Def Leppard tattoo ebbed and flowed with each flex of his impoverished bicep, making Hogan think of the way the words on Myra's T-shirt, "Nevada is God's Country," had rippled when she moved. Hogan grasped the seatbelt buckle with both hands and drove his thumbs against the pop release as enthusiastically as the kid had driven his into Hogan's windpipe. There was absolutely no response. The belt was frozen. He craned his neck to look at the kid again. The kid had made it as far as the fold-up bed and then stopped. That expression of large comic surprise had resurfaced on his face. He was staring straight ahead, which meant he was looking at something on the floor, and Hogan suddenly remembered the teeth. They were still chattering away. He looked down in time to see the jumbo chattery teeth march from the open end of the torn paper bag on their funny orange shoes. The molars and the canines and the incisors chopped rapidly up and down, producing a sound like ice in a cocktail shaker. The shoes, dressed up in their tony white spats, almost seemed to bounce along the gray carpet. Hogan found himself thinking of Fred Astaire tap-dancing his way across a stage and back again. Fred Astaire with a cane tucked under his arm and a straw boater tipped saucily forward over one eye. "Oh, shit," the kid said, half-laughing. "Is that what you were dickering for back there? Oh, man, I kill you, label dude. I'm going to be doing the world a favor." The key, Hogan thought. The key on the side of the teeth, the one you used to wind them up. It isn't turning. And he suddenly had another of those precognitive flashes. He understood exactly what was going to happen. The kid was going to reach for them. The teeth abruptly stopped walking and chattering. They simply stood there on the slightly tilted floor of the van, jaws slightly agape. Eyeless, they still seemed to peer quizzically up at the kid. "Chattery teeth!" Mr. Brian Adams from Nowhere USA marveled. He reached out and curled his right hand around them, just as Hogan had known he would. "Bite him!" Hogan shrieked. "Bite his fucking fingers right off!" The kid's head snapped up, the gray-green eyes wide with startlement. He gaped at Hogan for a moment, that big expression of totally dumb surprise, and then he began to laugh. His laughter was high and shrieky, a perfect complement to the wind howling through the van and billowing the curtains like long ghost hands. "Bite me! Bite me! Bite me!" the kid chanted, as if it were the punchline to the funniest joke he'd ever heard. "Hey, label dude! I thought I was the one who bumped my head!" The kid clamped the handle of the switchblade in his own teeth and stuck the forefinger of his left hand between the jumbo chattery teeth. "Ay-ee!" he said around the knife. He giggled and wiggled his finger between the oversized jaws.
"Ay-ee-ee!"
The teeth didn't move. Neither did the orange feet. Hogan's premonition collapsed around him the way dreams do upon waking. The kid wiggled his finger between the chattery teeth one more time, began to pull it out, then began screaming at the top of his lungs, "Oh, shit! Shit, motherfucker!" For a moment, Hogan's heart leaped in his chest, and then he realized that, although the kid was still screaming, what he was really doing was laughing at him. The teeth had remained perfectly still the whole time. The kid lifted the teeth up for a closer look as he grasped his knife again. He shook the long blade at the chattery teeth like a teacher shaking his pointer at a naughty student.
"You shouldn't bite," he said. "That's very bad behavior."
One of the orange feet took a sudden step forward on the grimy palm of the kid's hand. The jaws opened at the same time, and before Hogan was fully aware of what was happening, the chattery teeth had closed on the kid's nose. This time, Brian Adams' scream was real, a thing of agony and ultimate surprise. He flailed at the teeth with his right hand, trying to bat them away, but they were locked on his nose as tightly as Hogan's seatbelt was locked around his middle. Blood and filaments of torn gristle burst out between the canines in red strings. The kid jackknifed backward, and for a moment, Hogan could see only his flailing body, lashing elbows and kicking feet. Then he saw the glitter of the knife. The kid screamed again and bolted into a sitting position. His long hair had fallen over his face in a curtain. The clamped teeth stuck out like the rudder of some strange boat. The kid had somehow managed to insert the blade of his knife between the teeth and what remained of his nose. "Kill him!" Hogan shouted hoarsely. He had lost his mind. On some level, he understood that he must have lost his mind, but for the time being, that didn't matter. "Go on! Kill him!" The kid shrieked a long, piercing fire whistle sound and twisted the knife. The blade snapped, but not before it had managed to pry the disembodied jaws at least partway open. The teeth fell off his face and into his lap. Most of the kid's nose fell off with them. The kid shook his hair back. His gray-green eyes were crossed, trying to look down at the mangled stump in the middle of his face. His mouth was drawn down in a rictus of pain. The tendons in his neck stood out like pulley wires. The kid reached for the teeth. The teeth stepped nimbly backward on their orange cartoon feet. They were nodding up and down, marching in place, grinning at the kid, who was now sitting with his ass on his calves. Blood drenched the front of his T-shirt. The kid said something then that confirmed Hogan's belief that he, Hogan, had lost his mind. Only in a fantasy born of delirium would such words be spoken.
"Give me back my nose, you son of a bitch!"
The kid reached for the teeth again, and this time they ran forward, under his snatching hand, between his spread legs, and there was a meaty chomp sound as they closed on the bulge of faded blue denim just below the place where the zipper of the kid's jeans ended. Brian Adams' eyes flew wide open, so did his mouth. His hands rose to the level of his shoulders, springing wide open, and for a moment he looked like some strange Al Jolson imitator preparing to sing Mammy. The switch knife flew over his shoulder to the back of the van.
"Jesus! Jesus! Jesus!"
The orange feet were pumping rapidly as if doing a Highland fling. The pink jaws of the jumbo chattery teeth nodded rapidly up and down as if saying, "Yes! Yes! Yes," and then shook back and forth just as rapidly as if saying, "No, no, no." As the cloth of the kid's jeans began to rip, and that was not all that was ripping by the sound, Bill Hogan passed out. He came to twice. The first time must have been only a short while later, because the storm was still howling through and around the van, and the light was about the same. He started to turn around, but a monstrous bolt of pain shot up his neck. Whiplash, of course, and probably not as bad as it could have been, or would be tomorrow, for that matter. Always supposing he lived until tomorrow. The kid. I have to look and make sure he's dead. No, you don't. Of course he's dead. If he wasn't, you would be. Now he began to hear a new sound from behind him, the steady chutter-click-chutter of the teeth. They're coming for me. They've finished with the kid, but they're still hungry, so they're coming for me. He placed his hands on the seatbelt buckle again, but the pop release was still hopelessly jammed, and his hands seemed to have no strength anyway. The teeth grew steadily closer. They were right in back of his seat now from the sound, and Hogan's confused mind read a rhyme into their ceaseless chomping. Clickety-clickety-clickety-clack. We are the teeth and we're coming back. Watch us walk, watch us chew. We ate him and now we'll eat you. Hogan closed his eyes. The clittering sound stopped. Now there was only the ceaseless whine of the wind and the spick-spack of sand striking the dented side of the XRT van. Hogan waited. After a long, long time, he heard a single click, followed by the minute sound of tearing fibers. There was a pause, then the click and the tearing sound was repeated. What's it doing? The third time the click and the small tearing sound came, he felt the back of his seat moving a little and understood. The teeth were pulling themselves up to where he was. Somehow, they were pulling themselves up to him. Hogan thought of the teeth closing on the bulge below the zipper of the kid's jeans and willed himself to pass out again. Sand flew in through the broken windshield, tickled his cheeks and forehead. Click, rip, click, rip, click, rip. The last one was very close. Hogan didn't want to look down, but he was unable to help himself. And beyond his right hip, where the seat cushion met the seat's back, he saw a wide, white grin. It moved upward with agonizing slowness, pushing with the as-yet-unseen orange feet as it nipped a small fold of gray seat cover between its incisors. Then the jaws let go, and it lurched convulsively upward. This time, what the teeth fastened on was the pocket of Hogan's slacks, and he passed out again. When he came to the second time, the wind had dropped and it was almost dark. The air had taken on a queer purple shade Hogan could not remember ever having seen in the desert before. The skirls of sand running across the desert floor beyond the sagging ruin of the windshield looked like fleeing ghost children. For a moment, he could remember nothing at all of what had happened to land him here. The last clear memory he could touch was of looking at his gas gauge, seeing it was down to an eighth, then looking up and seeing a sign at the side of the road which said, "Scooters, Grocery, and Roadside Zoo, Gas, Snacks, Cold Beer, See Live Rattlesnakes." He understood that he could hold on to this amnesia for a while if he wanted to. Given a little time, his subconscious might even be able to wall off certain dangerous memories permanently. But it could also be dangerous not to remember. Very dangerous. Because the wind gusted. Sand rattled against the badly dented driver's side of the van. It sounded almost like teeth, teeth, teeth. The fragile surface of his amnesia shattered, letting everything pour through, and all the heat fell from the surface of Hogan's skin. He uttered a rusty squawk as he remembered the sound. Chomp! The chattery teeth had made as they closed on the kid's balls, and he closed his hands over his own crotch, eyes rolling fearfully in their sockets as he looked for the runaway teeth. He didn't see them, but the ease with which his shoulders followed the movement of his hands was new. He looked down at his lap and slowly removed his hands from his crotch. His seatbelt was no longer holding him prisoner. It lay on the gray carpet in two pieces. The metal tongue of the pull-up section was still buried inside the buckle, but beyond it, there was only ragged red fabric. The belt had not been cut. It had been gnawed through. He looked up into the rearview mirror and saw something else. The back doors of the van were standing open, and there was only a vague, man-shaped red outline on the gray carpet where the kid had been. Mr. Brian Adams, from Nowhere, USA, was gone. So were the chattery teeth. Hogan got out of the van slowly, like an old man afflicted with a terrible case of arthritis. He found that if he held his head perfectly level, it wasn't too bad, but if he forgot and moved it in any direction, a series of exploding bolts went off in his neck, shoulders, and upper back. Even the thought of allowing his head to roll backward was unbearable. He walked slowly to the rear of the van, running his hand lightly over the dented, paint-peeled surface, hearing and feeling the glass as it crunched under his feet. He stood at the far end of the driver's side for a long time. He was afraid to turn the corner. He was afraid that, when he did, he would see the kid squatting on his hunkers, holding the knife in his left hand, and grinning that empty grin. But he couldn't just stand here, holding his head on top of his strained neck like a big bottle of nitroglycerin while it got dark around him. So at last, Hogan went around. Nobody. The kid was really gone. Or so it seemed at first. The wind gusted, blowing Hogan's hair around his bruised face, then dropped away completely. When it did, he heard a harsh scraping noise coming from about 20 yards beyond the van. He looked in that direction, and saw the soles of the kid's sneakers just disappearing over the top of a dry wash. The sneakers were spread in a limp V. They stopped moving for a moment, as if whatever was hauling the kid's body needed a few moments' rest to recoup its strength, and then they began to move again in little jerks. A picture of terrible, unendurable clarity suddenly rose in Hogan's mind. He saw the jumbo chattery teeth standing on their funny orange feet just over the edge of that wash, standing there in spats so cool they made the coolest of the California raisins look like Hicks from Fargo, North Dakota, standing there in the electric purple light which had overspread these empty lands west of Las Vegas. They were clamped shut on a thick wad of the kid's long blonde hair. The chattery teeth were backing up. The chattery teeth were dragging Mr. Brian Adams away to nowhere, USA. Hogan turned in the other direction and walked slowly toward the road, holding his nitro head straight and steady on top of his neck. It took him 5 minutes to negotiate the ditch and another 15 to flag a ride, but he eventually managed both things, and during that time, he never looked back once. 9 months later, on a clear, hot summer day in June, Bill Hogan happened by Scooter's Grocery and Roadside Zoo again, except the place had been renamed Myra's Place, the sign now said. Gas, cold beer, videos. Below the words was a picture of a wolf, or maybe just a woof, snarling at the moon. Wolf himself, the amazing Minnesota coy dog, was lying in a cage in the shade of the porch overhang. His back legs were sprawled extravagantly, and his muzzle was on his paws. He did not get up when Hogan got out of his car to fill the tank. Of the rattlesnakes and the tarantula, there was no sign. "Hi, Wolf," he said as he went up the steps. The cage's inmate rolled over onto his back and allowed his long red tongue to dangle enticingly from the side of his mouth as he stared up at Hogan. The store looked bigger and cleaner inside. Hogan guessed this was partly because the day outside was not so threatening, but that wasn't all. The windows had been washed, for one thing, and that made a big difference. The board walls had been replaced with pine paneling that still smelled fresh and sappy. A snack bar with 5 stools had been added at the back. The novelty case was still there, but the cigarette loads, the joy buzzers, and Dr. Wacky's sneezing powder were gone. The case was filled with videotape boxes. A hand-lettered sign read, X-rated in back room. Be 18 or be gone. The woman at the cash register was standing in profile to Hogan, looking down at a calculator and running numbers on it. For a moment, Hogan was sure this was Mr. and Mrs. Scooter's daughter, the female complement to those 3 boys Scooter had talked about raising. Then she lifted her head, and Hogan saw it was Mrs. Scooter herself. It was hard to believe this could be the woman whose mammoth bosom had almost burst the seams of her Nevada is God's Country t-shirt, but it was. Mrs. Scooter had lost at least 50 pounds and dyed her hair a sleek and shiny walnut brown. Only the sun wrinkles around the eyes and mouth were the same.
"Get you gas?"
she asked. "Yep, $15 worth." He handed her a 20 and she rang it up. "Place looks a lot different from the last time I was in."
"Been a lot of changes since Scooter died, all right," she agreed, and pulled a 5 out of the register.
She started to hand it over, really looked at him for the first time, and hesitated.
"Say, ain't you the guy who almost got killed the day we had that storm last year?"
He nodded and stuck out his hand. "Bill Hogan." She didn't hesitate, simply reached over the counter and gave his hand a single strong pump. The death of her husband seemed to have improved her disposition, or maybe it was just that the waiting for it to happen was over. "I'm sorry about your husband. He seemed like a nice enough sort."
"Scoot? Yeah, he's a good enough fellow before he took ill," she agreed. "What about you? You all recovered?"
Hogan nodded. "I wore a neck brace for about 6 weeks, not for the first time either, but I'm okay." She was looking at the scar which twisted down his right cheek.
"He do that? That kid?"
"Yeah."
"Stuck you pretty bad."
"Yeah."
"I heard he got busted up in the crash and then crawled into the desert to die."
She was looking at Hogan shrewdly.
"That about right?"
Hogan smiled a little. "Near enough, I guess."
"JT, he's the state bear around these parts, said the animals worked him over pretty good. Desert rats are awful impolite that way."
"I don't know much about that part."
"JT said the kid's own mother wouldn't have recognized him."
She put a hand on her reduced bosom and looked at him earnestly.
"If I'm lying, I'm dying."
Hogan laughed out loud. In the weeks and months since the day of the storm, this was something he found himself doing more often. He had come, it sometimes seemed to him, to a slightly different arrangement with life since that day.
"Lucky he didn't kill you," Mrs. Scooter said. "You had a hell of a narrow escape. God must have been with you."
"Oh, that's right," Hogan agreed. He looked down at the video case. "I see you took out the novelties."
"Damn nasty old things, you bet. That's the first thing I did after—"
Her eyes suddenly widened.
"Oh, say, jeepers, I got something belongs to you. If I was to forget, I reckon Scooter'd come back and haunt me."
Hogan frowned, puzzled, but the woman was already going behind the counter.
She stood on tiptoe and brought something down from a high shelf above the rack of cigarettes. It was, Hogan saw, with absolutely no surprise at all, the jumbo chattery teeth. The woman set them down beside the cash register. Hogan stared at that frozen, insouciant grin with a deep sense of déjà vu. There they were, the world's biggest set of chattery teeth, standing on their funny orange shoes beside the Slim Jim display, cool as a mountain breeze, grinning up at him as if to say, "Hello there. Did you forget me? I didn't forget you, my friend. Not at all." "I found him on the porch the next day, after the storm blew itself out," Mrs. Scooter said. She laughed. "Just like old Scoot to give you something for free, then stick it in a bag with a hole in the bottom. I was going to throw him out, but he said he gave him to you and I should stick him on a shelf someplace. He said a traveling man who came in once would most likely come in again, and here you are." "Yes," Hogan agreed. "Here I am." He picked up the teeth and slipped his finger between the slightly gaping jaws. He ran the pad of the finger along the molars at the back, and in his mind, he heard the kid, Mr. Brian Adams, from Nowhere, USA, chanting, "Bite me! Bite me! Bite me!" Were the back teeth still streaked with the dull rust of the boy's blood? Hogan thought he could see something way back in there, but perhaps it was only a shadow. "I saved it because Scooter said you had a boy." Hogan nodded. "I do." "And," he thought, "the boy still has a father. I'm holding the reason why. The question is, did they walk all the way back here on their little orange feet because this was home? Or because they somehow knew what Scooter knew, that sooner or later, a traveling man always comes back to where he's been, the way a murderer is supposed to revisit the scene of his crime?"
"Well, if you still want them, they're still yours," she said.
For a moment, she looked solemn. And then she laughed.
"Shit, I probably would have thrown him out anyway, except I forgot about him. Of course, they're still broken."
Hogan turned the key jutting out of the gum. It went around twice, making little wind-up clicks, then simply turned uselessly in its socket. Broken. Of course they were. And would be, until they decided they didn't want to be broken for a while. And the question wasn't how they had gotten back here. And the question wasn't even why. That was simple. They'd been waiting for him, for Mr. William I. Hogan. They had been waiting for the label dude. The question was this: what did they want? He poked his finger into the white steel grin again and whispered, "Bite me. Do you want to?" The teeth only stood there on their super cool orange feet and grinned.
"They ain't talking, seems like," Mrs. Scooter said.
"No," Hogan said. And suddenly he found himself thinking of the kid, Mr. Brian Adams from Nowhere, USA. A lot of kids like him now. A lot of grown-ups, too, blowing along the highways like tumbleweed, always ready to take your wallet, say, "Fuck you, sugar," and run. You could stop picking up hitchhikers, he had, and you could put a burglar alarm system in your home, he'd done that, too. But it was still a hard world where planes sometimes fell out of the sky and the crazies were apt to turn up any place. And there was always room for a little more insurance. He had a wife, after all, and a son. It might be nice if Jack had a set of jumbo chattery teeth sitting on his desk, just in case something happened. Just in case. "Thank you for saving him," he said, picking the chattery teeth up carefully by the feet. "I think my kid'll get a kick out of them, even if they are broken."
"Thanks, Scoot, not me. You want a bag?" she grinned. "I got a plastic one, no holes, guaranteed."
Hogan shook his head and slipped the chattery teeth into his sport coat pocket. "I'll carry them this way," he said, and grinned right back at her. "Keep them handy."
"Suit yourself."
As he started for the door, she called after him.
"Stop back again. I make a damn good chicken salad sandwich."
"I'll bet you do, and I will," Hogan said. He went out, down the steps, and stood for a moment in the hot desert sunshine, smiling. He felt good. He felt good a lot these days. He had come to think that was just the way to be. To his left, Woof, the amazing Minnesota coy dog, got to his feet, poked his snout through the crisscross of wire on the side of his cage, and barked. In Hogan's pocket, the chattery teeth clicked together once. The sound was soft, but Hogan heard it and felt them move. He patted his pocket. "Easy, big fella," he said softly.
He walked briskly across the yard, climbed behind the wheel of his new Chevrolet van, and drove away toward Los Angeles. He had promised Lita and Jack he would be home by 7, 8 at the latest. And he was a man who liked to keep his promises.